Welcome to Profit Boss Radio, where successful women have paved the road to their own financial freedom. Each week, your host, Hillary Hendershot, financial coach, money mindset expert, and experienced wealth manager, will help you discover the keys to the wealth and peace of mind you want and deserve in her no-nonsense and authentic style. Starting right now.
Welcome to Profit Boss Radio. I'm Hillary Hendershot, your host. This is episode 50, How to Get Started Financially, starring PT Money. And if you are listening to this show as it airs, this is the first episode of 2017. So that's why I say welcome to the new year. One of the things that I did last year was I offered strategy sessions in alignment with Women's Financial Freedom Month. And I got on the phone with several of you, many of you, dozens of you even. And one thing I discovered that I didn't know was happening is that a lot of you have the pretty basic question, how do I get started? How do I start, Hillary? I have my degree, I have a job, I have this paycheck, it comes in. What do I do first? And so I invited blogger PT, his name is Philip Taylor, he goes by PT, on to Profit Boss Radio so we could talk about how he got started. And I think he offered some amazing tips. Philip is a CPA. He's a husband and father of three. He created ptmoney.com in 2007. And then he founded FinCon, the annual conference for financial media, in 2011. And for those of you who are sort of know about FinCon, it's huge. People love this event. Philip got rid of debt. He learned to live lean. He saved his money and eventually left his unsatisfying corporate career to pursue his entrepreneurial ventures on time. He's just a flat out nice guy with a great radio voice. So I hope you enjoy this episode of Profit Boss Radio. PT Money, welcome to Profit Boss Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me, Hillary. Good to be here.
It is the first of the year. 2017 looms ahead like a big blank slate, a big green ocean or blue ocean, whatever you say. It's all opportunity and anything is possible. And as the new year begins, lots of my listeners are going to be thinking about how to get started financially and how to get started saving. In fact, many of them are already thinking about that. And one of the things my listeners really want to know is literally the steps to take. So let's really get into the nitty gritty. Let's talk about you. How did you get started investing? What were the first steps you took?
The first step I took was when I got employed. So my first job out of college, you know, I had the opportunity to participate in my company's 401k. They offered a little bit of a matching to that. And so that was probably my first opportunity to do it. I didn't do any taxable investing probably, heck, until 10 years after that point. So most of my investing has been, you know, in my retirement accounts through employer-based plans, at least early on in my career.
But I think you kind of, and I think I may have read this on your blog, you may feel like you got a slow start or you kind of faltered in the beginning. Did I read that right?
Yeah, I certainly didn't save as much as I should have early on, and I didn't see the importance of it. I think I even, one of my first employers, I wasn't saving even up to the match with the 401k. And so, yeah, I struggled with making it like such an important part of my life that it should have been. And so it was just really an afterthought, an afternote. And so, just didn't prioritize it.
And so you were contributing to that 401k, kind of foregoing free money, as they say, by not contributing up to the match. But at what point did you maybe take on saving in a different kind of account? Did you have an emergency fund, or I call it a curveball account? Did you save in a savings account at all? Or at what point did you open another account?
Yeah. So for the most part, when I first started, I just had a, you know, basic checking account like most people and then a savings account attached to that. And so at the end of the month, I would try to sweep some money over that I had left over and put it in that savings account and promise myself I wouldn't spend it or promise myself I'd keep it in there for some unknown thing in the future. Because I always, you know, certainly heard that I needed money for the future for something. So it should at least try to stay over there. Inevitably, you know, 2 or 3 months down the road, I would reach and grab that money and sweep it back over and spend it, or, you know, just not be as focused in that savings effort. So it wasn't really until I automated and separated my accounts that I started seeing like consistent long-term success. So I created essentially a pay yourself first model where as soon as your paycheck hits your checking account, a savings withdrawal, you know, hits that and moves it to a separate savings account. When I say separate, I actually opened up a savings account at a, you know, completely different bank.
You actually moved it to a different institution.
Yeah,
altogether.
Yeah. So it was not at a place where I had a debit card attached to it or had any kind of credit card attached to it. It was strictly a savings account at a separate institution. And so created a little bit of, enough of a barrier for me not to easily sweep it back and forth.
Little
and
behavior then, modification.
Yep. And that was huge for me. So that's kind of how I started building the emergency fund. And that prevented me from going into future debt. It also just gave me the sense that, hey, I could control, you know, my financial future. I could, you know, there are some steps I could take here to kind of get ahead of the airplane, so to speak.
And so how do you think a person can know when they're ready to start investing for the long term? I really thought about this and I thought, is there actually a formula I can give them or a spreadsheet? And I just don't know. So I'm eager to hear what you have to say.
I mean, I'm going to hopefully try to tell my kids that they should have that long-term mindset early on. I mean, it's hard to, certainly not natural as a young person to have that mindset, or even maybe as a young adult to have that mindset of thinking about the future. But what I always like to do is make that person a real person in your mind. So if you could write, what I like to say sometimes, if you could write a letter, you know, to your future self, what would you write that, you know, future person? And so I think if you can kind of picture your future, you know, what's going on in your future and what's happening down the line like that, it puts a little more tangible, you know, flavor to thinking about the future and putting you more in a mindset to think long term. I mean, I don't know. I mean, when we're young, we're kind of going through the basics and trying to and just trying to meet, you know, the basic needs. So I don't know. I think that's a challenge. I think you have to have, you know, mentors in your life or people in your life who. And maybe that's the answer, having people in your life who are older, who are exposed to longer term ideas. And so they can kind of learn from their story and they can inspire you to think more long term like that. So right. Luckily, I had my dad who was a CPA, and, you know, he was the one that I would, whenever I had those questions, I would bounce those ideas off of him. And dad was like, look, you know, you've got your 401k, you know, but you got this option to do an IRA as well. So he's the one who taught me about the IRA. And help me kind of set that up and get that going.
I really like what you said, because I think a lot of people get stuck thinking, well, my financial life right now isn't that stable. So I don't want to put money into a 401k or an IRA that I don't know I won't have to pull out. And I think that it's kind of a chicken and egg problem, because maybe your financial life isn't stable because you haven't had that long-term thinking, which is what you mentioned at the very first, at the outset of your answer. That the thinking and the saving kind of go hand in hand. And knowing that you are going to be at a certain point, 40, 45 years old, thinking about, okay, have I started saving for retirement? Now the anxiety sets in, you know, facing those same kind of issues that those more chronologically senior people in your life are talking about now that you maybe don't relate to off the cuff.
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge for young people. So I empathize with them. And what ultimately drove me to save more for the long term was my current term self-interest. So my dad actually showed me how a Roth IRA or an IRA could save me money now on my taxes that also happened to be benefiting my financial future. So that was the trigger for me. It was like, oh, wait, you mean I can get a bigger refund back on my taxes if I contribute to this retirement account? Heck yeah, let's do that. Let's check it, you know, let's get the money back, you know, so that we, and then so it was trading, you know, figuring out a short term trigger to trade off for a long term mindset. That worked for me.
Very good. Okay. I came up with three places people might find themselves, and I thought we could kind of talk through the best ways for each of these imaginary sort of case study kind of people to get a good foundation going. And these three scenarios, these case studies, may or may not be taken from actual listener calls that people scheduled with me over the last 60 days. No identifying characteristics, of course. First, there's Derek. Derek is 30 years old. He lives in upstate Washington. He teaches private golf lessons. He makes about $45,000 a year doing that, but it's inconsistent. So obviously you can't teach golf all year round. And what happens is his expenses are super low. And when he has about $10,000 in the bank, because he's actually a good saver, but he just takes the money and he travels. And his girlfriend makes him listen to my show And so he's ready to kind of change his ways. He's, you know, kind of foraying into, okay, so if I were to behave differently with my money, what would that look like? So what do you think? Where should Derek start? And how can he figure out how much to save?
Oh, that's good. I would say Derek obviously enjoys travel and he's investing in his life and his future by doing that. And so I wouldn't necessarily take those funds and completely remove them from the travel
right.
part of his life. So, you know, I'd certainly leave half or, you know, some percentage in that. But in terms of starting, I would look to the opportunities that can create current savings for him. So if he's making $45,000 a year, he probably has access to some type of traditional IRA or Roth IRA, some type of investment vehicle that could actually benefit him right now. And so I would, you know, talk with his CPA, talk with his tax planner, sit down, have that conversation, see what the options are and see if you could get something like that started. You know, those accounts typically have annual maximums that you can contribute to them. I forget the this year's maximum on the Roth IRA,
but it's $6,000.
It is $6,000. Okay. So that might be a goal for him to shoot for, is to try to max that out for the year. I mean, when I was first starting investing, those became my goals early on, to try to max those out and take advantage of as much tax savings as I could get using those products. And so, you know, for most people, I think the long-term retirement investing is probably the best place to start. It's a little intimidating. What I like to tell people is just get the accounts open. You know, you don't have to have it all figured out right now, but open up either, you know, a simple taxable brokerage account or some type of IRA account, get them open and get a small contribution going to them. It can be 10 bucks a month, as simple as that, 25 bucks a month. Here's the thing. It's going to put you in the habit of saving. It's going to put you in the habit of investing, and you will figure out the rest as you go. But the hardest part of getting started investing is actually just getting started. So don't feel like you have to have it all figured out. Just get the accounts open, figure out what accounts, or open multiple accounts. I have multiple accounts. Get those open and get some small contributions going to those. And you don't have, like I say, you don't have to be invested in particular funds or particular investments at this point. They can just be invested in money market accounts, which is the equivalent of cash. And just get in that process. It's more about the habit and the behavior of saving and investing than it is about the figuring out the particular method that's right for you early on. If you're in the habit of it and you have the practice and you have the system set up, then you can figure out how to make the most of it down the road.
Okay. And this is great because I always tell people just to go to Vanguard. What are the custodians or brokerages that you like and you recommend?
I'm 100% in Vanguard with my retirement savings and retirement accounts. So I'm in agreement. That's where I go. I use their target date funds. Their 2040 fund is the one I use for me. I do have a small taxable account with Trade King, but that is money literally that I could, you know, lose tomorrow and wouldn't be crying about. So it's a very small percentage. Yeah, yeah. And it's just not as fun as Vegas, unfortunately. At least these days, my picks haven't been as fun as Vegas. So yeah, I'm all in for retirement, mostly retirement investing and mostly, you know, passive low-cost index funds.
Okay, got it. All right, second case study, this Meredith. Oh, by the way, on Derek also, I also told him he kind of has a young person's job teaching private golf lessons. And I said, you know, if you put your entrepreneur cap on, you're already working with high-income people, right? Like broke people can't afford golf lessons. Maybe there's a golf lesson business or a golf pro shop or some kind of business that allows you to make money when you're not actually physically there. So I told them to focus on also increasing that income and earning capacity.
I love it. It's just another form of investing, right? Investing
yes.
in yourself and your, you know, it's another asset you can build. So I'm an entrepreneur. I'm big on it. I'm bullish on it. There's no ceiling to what you can do if you're hanging out your own shingle. So yeah, I like that.
All right. Second case study is Meredith. Meredith lives in Wyoming. She's 35 and she's been learning her business and paying off loans. She's kind of been in training, you know, where like doctors, they don't get paid very much in the beginning. So she just paid everything off and she's fully ramped up in her business. And she went and checked how much she's making now. And she's self-employed, but it's kind of like it's all set in stone how much she can make. And she didn't really know what to expect when the loan payments stopped and the income went up, but her income quadrupled. So now she's making $120,000 a year and she's 35. She only has about $20,000 saved for retirement and she doesn't really know what to do with her money. And kudos to her for reaching out. And so what do you think she should do first?
Is she a solopreneur?
Yes.
Okay. She should look into individual 401k or the solo 401k. That's the account I use to invest funds from my business for my retirement. As a solo individual, it's an incredible account for deferring. And when I say deferring, I mean taking current dollars and pushing them toward your retirement so that they're not taxed until retirement. So deferring as much income as possible so that she doesn't pay a lot of taxes on that income, because $120,000 is a single person. Sounds like a single person, maybe. She's going to be paying a lot of taxes. So a solo 401k would be a great vehicle for her to use to think about retirement. She could also look at the SEP IRA, the SEP IRA. But yeah, again, just, you know, starting with those accounts, starting small, getting comfortable with the process, getting comfortable with an institution that she feels comfortable with, like Vanguard, like we've suggested, and maybe finding, you know, some people to kind of bounce ideas off of, getting educated, because at the end of the day, you know, you're going to want to be aware of what, you know, what your money's doing or why you're doing it. Don't just take our advice, but, you know, maybe surround yourself with others who are kind of in a similar situation and bounce ideas off them and
just really try to. It really is a process, isn't it?
Yeah.
By the way, let me just add some data points here. I misspoke before. The Roth maximum contribution is not $6,000 a year. It is $5,500 if you're under the age of 50 and $6,500 if you're 50 or older. And the solo K that PT Money just mentioned, the max contribution is $18,000 a year if you're under 50 and $23,000 if you're 50 or older. So that solo K can be a real goldmine when you look at the compound returns you can earn on tax-free dollars. So spot on that one. I totally agree. And with $120,000 of income, assuming her expenses are pretty low, she might well be in a good position to max out that solo K. So, and then look at other after-tax ways of saving.
Absolutely.
Okay. So then one of the most common questions I get is from people who are like 25 years old. They've got maybe $40,000 and $50,000 in student loans. They have a good income, maybe $65,000, $70,000. And their question is, should I pay off my loans first or should I save first? How do people evaluate that question?
So, you know, you certainly want to be making the minimum payments on your debt and, you know, keep staying up with your obligation. And then I would look to any kind of employer incentivized retirement savings. So if you have a 401k at your job, I would certainly try to max that out in terms of getting, making sure you get the max. Then I would look to traditional IRA or a Roth IRA outside of your employer. You can do that typically along with the 401k. And so I'd look to that and potentially maxing that out. And then I would probably shift my focus back to the student loans and making aggressive payments toward that. Most student loans these days, interest rates are really low and flat. So, you know, depending on the situation, I would say most likely I would be in the position to let that ride and just do as much investing as I could and let other goals take precedent over paying off the debt. Now, that's me. Some people reach a point in their life where they're like, man, I'm 5 years from college. I just need to get this out of my life. I'm tired of making a debt payment.
It's heartache.
And you know, there, you'll reach a point to where, you know, you see that balance coming down, you kind of hit maybe the turning point and you're like, all right, well, we just take a couple of big cash, you know, chunks. We could knock this out. So let's maybe hyper-focus on that for a little season and then do that. But, you know, right out of the gate, I wouldn't stress about it. I didn't. It took me about 10 years to pay off my student loans. I had about $25,000. And I was just fine, you know, doing that. I made investing a priority. And, I'm looking back, you know, I'm so glad I was investing at that time and saving in my life because, you know, I was able to buy my first home before I paid off my student loans, I believe, and even, you know, hit some real big peaks in terms of retirement and savings and stuff before I paid those off. And so that money is now going a long ways, you know, compared to the interest I was paying on that student loans. So
it really does kind of start to snowball, huh?
Yep, totally. And the earlier you start with your savings, the better. And again, to me, it just goes back to habits too. Like, even if you're like totally a debt, you know, adverse person, you're like, man, I can't believe I have this student loans. And for whatever reason, you've been convinced that your job market is just not going to sustain you for the long period, or, you know, your income's going to go up and down or whatever. You know, if you're just saying, okay, I got to get rid of that debt, that's my laser focused goal. Again, go back to the simple concept of just open the savings accounts, just get the small automation going, set the systems up so that they're in place whenever you're finally ready to start throwing more money and investing and saving. it'll be that much easier and you'll be more comfortable with the process.
Great. Now, there is an article on your blog I love called 7 Retirement Savings Excuses You Can Overcome. And I love that article. And I wanted to talk about the kind of the top 3 excuses that I picked out that I hear the most. But before we get into those excuses, let's just first spend some time talking about what you've seen. And maybe I'll throw in some of what I've seen can happen to people if they don't save for retirement. So kind of hitting on that fear, I really want people listening to understand at some point your naivete will turn into something far more sinister, you know, down the road if you don't take action, if you don't open that account, if you don't normalize spending in your life. Are there some stories you can tell or a story you can tell of someone who kind of got themselves into that bad situation or kind of something you think of when I bring up the idea of people who don't save for retirement?
Yeah, I think everyone should go and look and see what Social Security is going to pay them whenever they retire. And that number will probably shock you. That number will probably be, you know, a slap across the face. And there's so many people today that retire and that's what they're spending their money. I mean, that's the money they had to spend on. And so we have some people, friends or family that have recently retired and that's all the money they have, you know. So if you're going to be, you know, dependent upon the government in retirement as your sole source of income, it's going to be, you know, tough times. You know, it's not going to be, you know, enough money to, you know, provide it, you know, a very comfortable lifestyle or even halfway comfortable lifestyle, I think. So, you know, I think we're lucky that we have that safety net in our society. I'm glad, certainly glad we have it. It's not meant to be, you know, a full incomes or a full support for you whenever you can't work anymore. And so there will be a point in your life, unfortunately, when you can't do physical labor or you can't do mental labor for yourself, but you're still living. And so, you know, you need someone to support you. And the question is, do you want to be with the person who supports, you know, supporting yourself, or do you want to be relying on other people to provide that care and support for you? I like being in control of my own life. I like being independent. I like calling my own shots. And so I think most people are that way. And, you know, they want to, especially as they age, they want to have more and more control. And so, you know, that's what I'm seeing out there. And I just think if people give it some thought and go, like I said, go look at what Social Security will pay you. And I think you'll be surprised. And,
yeah.
You'll want to take some action.
I will put a link in the show notes to the place on the Social Security website where you can input your own date of birth and Social Security number, and the tool will pull up how much you've paid into the system and will estimate your future benefits. But let me just tell you from my experience in my practice, because a lot of my clients are receiving Social Security, and Social Security is going to inflate on a normal basis with inflation. So it'll be the same amount. If I tell you now, it'll feel the same in the future when you're receiving Social Security. It's probably somewhere between $15,000 and $20,000, maybe $25,000 a year if you're fully paid in. Like, you earned a lot of money over your lifetime. It was wage income. You paid into the system. That's kind of what people are looking at on a per person basis. So I don't know many people who could live on that today, especially not in Silicon Valley. And right. Then just from a quality of life perspective, I mean, you're talking about a lot of stress and regret and sadness and fear and anxiety and maybe being a burden to friends or family. And you end up, you know, you're not going to be able to travel the world. You won't have choice about where to live. Maybe you're renting a room or something like that. You know, just kind of all kinds of bad things. So I'm on board with all that. And now let's talk about some of these excuses people use. The first one is, it's pointless. Oh, PT, it doesn't matter. $25 a month. Are you kidding me? Why would I bother? Why would I even do that? It takes me 4 months to get $100. What do you think about that one?
Well, it is not pointless. Certainly not pointless. Even just the small act, like I've been saying all along, the act of savings gets you in that habit. And it builds. You'll find that it builds, and you will find that your ability to save and your desire to save will grow as you get in the habit of doing it. And you'll gain confidence. You'll gain control over your financial life. So it's certainly not pointless, and definitely challenge that argument. I think when I wrote the article, you know, that was kind of coming from one of my friends or something. I was like, just doesn't matter. You know, it's not a part of life. Like, money is not life to me. And so,
oh yeah.
You know, they were sort of separating the two concepts. And, you know, I challenge that, you know, that money can provide, you know, a quality life for you, and that it can set you up in the future to do some awesome things with it, including helping other people. So if you look at it through that lens, I think it becomes more, certainly not pointless.
Yeah, I think people who think that like it's not about the money or I don't need to be rich, that kind of a thing, like money isn't a worthwhile goal. I think that that is a kind of a superstition about money. But I mean, the fact is you have to have money to do almost anything. This is the world we live in. It's the world we've designed. It's not changing anytime soon. Even Bitcoin is money, right? Like it's not going away. So I think if you find yourself plagued with those thoughts, A, you're probably not listening to my show, but B, you know, I encourage you to get out there and talk with some people who are satisfied financially, because I don't think that people who think they have a healthy financial life also have that thought. Okay, the second excuse for not saving for retirement, it's only for the rich. Only rich people need retirement savings.
Yeah, you know, I totally disagree with that, obviously. Rich people certainly think about their investments probably more than most people because they're in a protection mode, right? But people who don't have a lot of money need to be in a growth mode. They need to have that growth mindset. And so investing early on and aggressively needs to be more important for, you know, younger folks or people who are just starting to earn. So it's certainly important. And the sooner you get started, the better. So regardless of how much you're making, think about it in terms of percentages, right? If you're making $25,000 a year, well, just start with, you know, 10%, start with 5% of that and work off that, start at that point. And if you just work off a percentage basis, you've obviously learned how to live on $25,000 a year. And so if you're able to save 10, 15% of that, you know, throughout your life to retirement, it will provide a sum that's essentially equivalent to about, you know, $25,000 a year. And so, you know, I don't have all the math on that, but that's kind of how it works.
You're spot on. I mean, just like savings amounts scale up, they also scale down. And, you know, in your article, you link to an article about a guy named Leonard McCracken, who retired in 1969 after having never made more than $10,000 a year. But he lived to be 107 and didn't outlive his money.
Yeah, that's impressive that old Leonard could do that.
Good old Leonard.
Yeah, you know what? But he prioritized savings. And I think when I read that article, I think the guy didn't even risk it in terms of putting it in the market. I think he was mostly in CDs, mostly, you know, in cash. And so he just literally got into the habit of practicing saving. So if he was making $10,000, he was saving a percentage of that for himself in the future. And so, like you said, that's allowed him to live without having a job in retirement for 41 years amongst, you know, some of the other things he did. I think he was in real estate a little bit too. But yeah, it's that mindset of always taking a percentage of what you're earning and saving it for tomorrow. And so, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of income you have. And in fact, the sooner you wake up to that and realize, you know what, if you're faithful with few, you know, there's a Bible verse here. If you're faithful with little, you'll be faithful with much. You know, if you can prove yourself that, hey, I can do this with just a small amount, think about what you can do whenever you really start making some money. And like I said, getting in those habits is what it's all about.
Yeah, stewardship of money is an important skill and you'll never be or preserve wealth without it. So the last excuse about saving for retirement is it's too risky. Stock market's too risky. I don't know who to trust. I don't know what to do with it. And I'm throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, whenever I hear this, I always like to tell people all the stock market is the accumulated sum of all the great companies in America. You know, I mean, that's really all it is. All the consuming you do every time you go to the shopping mall, every time you buy gas to fill up your car, every purchase you make online, it all relates back to that market. You're living in that market. And so by putting your dollars in that market directly in equity in those companies, all you're doing is further participating in that economy. And so, you know, as the economy goes, that market's going to go. It's historically proven that it will return around 7-8% per year. And it's the best we've got. Over a 40-year period, it's pretty much the best thing going. Nothing else has, you know, you can put your money in cash, but inflation's going to hurt it. You can put your money in real estate, but it's going to pretty much keep up with, you know, in terms of appreciation, you know, keep up with the market or just under. And so if it's the best thing you got, my philosophy is, you know,
don't fix what ain't broke.
Yeah, you need to be a part of it. And smarter people than me have figured that out and figured out that, you know, if you just participate in it, it's really the act of keeping up, you know, versus the act of risking anything. I think the real risk is not participating in it. And I think history has proven that. So, you know, I don't think there's much debate to be had over that. I know people with the current, you know, with the market crash in 2007, 2008, people, you know, have a recent sort of scare from that. But,
you know, unfortunately, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that has affected a lot of people in terms of their desire to get in the market. You know, that's unfortunate because I've enjoyed, you know, the gains from those years because I've continued to invest. And so if you have a long-term mindset and you look at the market's returns over those long years, that risk diminishes tremendously. So where the real risk comes is in the last 5 to 10 years before you retire, before you really need that money. You know, that's when you need to kind of start paring back and pulling it out of equities and putting it into more less volatile types of accounts, bonds and cash, things like that.
You know, you speak words straight from my heart. And I think that the simple explanation for the stock market is the one people really, truly don't understand, especially women, because we're in culture to think we don't understand it. We aren't necessarily drawn to it. But the fact of the matter is every dollar of corporate profit is by definition a dollar of shareholder profit. And so if you believe in companies and innovation and technology and even maintenance companies and blue chip companies and computer companies. And if you go to the shop at the mall, if you go to the movies, you're buying products from publicly traded companies. I mean, we couldn't live our lives without companies. So and the stock market is your opportunity in a passive, truly passive way to harvest those profits for yourself by giving entrepreneurs your dollars to invest in their profit-making enterprises. So
Thank you. So much better than me.
Oh, I thought you did a great job. So tell me something I've never talked about on this show because I'm a spreadsheet and systems kind of a gal. I'm super curious, your favorite budgeting and saving apps right now?
Oh, right now I'm loving Digit. Have you talked about this app yet
no.
on the show?
I'm telling you, you're the one. You're bringing it to Profit Boss Radio.
Digit is an automation app. So it saves automatically for you. It's text-based, so you can just text it, and it moves money automatically from your checking account over into a savings account. It doesn't do this percentage-wise. It doesn't do this dollar amount-wise. It does it algorithmically based on patterns of your spending and how you handle your checking account. So, you know, you hook it up to your checking account, and then over time, it learns how you spend and kind of what you tend to have left over every month or every other day. And so it moves money automatically from your checking account over to the savings account that they hold. It sounds scary, but it's totally auto magical is what I call it. I mean, and before you know it, you know, in a couple of weeks, in a month, you know, you'll have $300-$400 sitting there. And then in a couple more months, you'll have $1,000 sitting there. And it's kind of a keep the change mentality, right? That Bank of America did for a while there. But it's algorithmically based, so they're not going to ever pull money out that, you know, it puts you in danger of overspending or going negative on your bank account.
Do you text it to save, or does it save automatically?
It saves automatically. Now, you can text it to increase the amount of savings or decrease or withdraw your money or do anything you want. If you just leave it alone, don't ever talk to it, it will just automatically start pulling money out based on your spending and habits. So you can control it the whole time. But it's happening in the background, you know, without you having to. It goes back to remember what I was saying with my old, you know, savings account when I was first coming up, how I would sweep the money over and then I would end up using it. I mean, it's the same concept of automating and separating, but, mm-hmm. but a smarter computer is doing it versus me having to decide a percentage or a particular dollar amount. It's figuring out what the optimal amount is during a certain period of time.
Very cool.
It's free to use. The only downside is they don't pay you interest on the money in the savings. But I like to use it for like Christmas savings or vacation savings or, you know, some kind of like smaller $500 to $1,500 sort of, you know, savings account.
All right. Any other apps you swear by?
Let's see. I bank with Chase and Capital One 360. I like those guys.
I bank with Chase as well.
You know, I'm a Betterment fan. So for my...
Do you know their minimum account size?
I believe it's nothing or $100.
Perfect. That's great.
Yeah.
I've been wondering. Someone told me one of those robo advisors has a $50,000 minimum. So I thought I should find out which one it has the lowest.
Yeah, I think Betterment's very low. Now, their fees will change based on the amount you have saved.
Right.
So that will affect it. But what I use Betterment for is kind of the top end of my emergency fund. So, you know, my emergency fund is in Capital One 360, my savings account. But then when it reaches, say, like over $10,000, that next dollar will be transferred over to Betterment automatically. And Betterment has a kind of a sweeping tool that they pull the money over into their account once they see my regular emergency fund hits kind of a peak. So I don't want to invest all my emergency fund, but when it hits a certain level, I'm going to kind of throw those dollars over to the market. So that's kind of what I do there.
Awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. Thanks for helping us ring in the new year, PT Money. Anything else you'd like to mention right now?
No, that sounds good. Hit me up on Twitter at PT Money. Really enjoyed being on the show. Thanks, Hillary.
Awesome. Awesome. Happy 2017, everybody.
Hey, Profit Boss. Yes, you. Lean in here. I've got something to tell you. Do you remember that movie Mean Girls with Lindsay, whatever her name is, and the fabulous Tina Fey? It was all about this group of in-girls, the Plastics. And Lindsay Lohan plays the new girl who wants desperately to be part of the clique. You get the picture. Tina Fey was hilarious in that, by the way. Did you know she wrote it? Anyway, I want to tell you about another group on Facebook. It's nothing like the Plastics. I mean, come on, we're not in high school anymore. And seriously, it's much cooler to lift each other up instead of tearing each other down, don't you think? Because as we all know, as women, it can be tough to know who to trust when it comes to getting real about money. That's why I'm so proud of all the courageous women in the Profit Boss Facebook group. It's kind of like hanging out with your best friends. You know, ladies who've earned the right to be called your friend because you're not afraid to show a little bit of vulnerability. It's like that. And by the way, we let the men join too. So if you want to be part of a group of wholehearted women and men who aren't afraid to grow and support each other, give us a visit and bring your friends. Just go to HillaryHendershot.com/profitboss and you'll immediately be redirected to a place where you can request admission, which we will give you willingly. I'll see you on the inside.
Thank you for listening to Profit Boss Radio, where creating success on our own terms happens every day. You're not alone in your journey to a rich life, and that's why Hillary is here to add value in each and every episode. See you next time on the podcast for women and money.